and welcome to Volume 45, Number 40 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 3rd of October 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, a driver is accused of attempted murder. A charity refuses our MP's offer of £5,000, and the council discusses flogging a Banksy. Details of these and many other local stories in just a while, plus Disney's TV slot in Grapevine Extra. But first, a birthday, and our best wishes this week go out to listener Tony Balls, celebrating next Friday the 10th. Have a great day, Tony. It's another very busy week for news, so without further ado, it's over to Desney and Margaret.
Hello, I'm Margaret, and my first story is about an attempted murder crash. A man who had three children in the car when it crashed into oncoming traffic has appeared in court charged with attempted murder. Tancredo Bankhart, 40, was arrested following a three-car collision on the A146 between Hales and Loddon. Norwich Magistrates Court heard it was alleged that he had deliberately driven his Vauxhall Astra into oncoming traffic after sending a series of troubling text messages. One of the three children was airlifted to Addenbrookes Hospital and is still being treated for life-threatening injuries. Nicola Lamb, prosecuting, said another child has sustained significant facial injuries, while the third suffered fractures in the crash, but has since been discharged from the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. None of the children had been wearing seatbelts, she added. Bankhart of Saxon Road in Great Yarmouth appeared in court on crutches and was allowed to remain seated throughout proceedings due to his injuries. He wept in the dock at one point and spoke only to confirm his name, age and address, and did not enter pleas to three counts of attempted murder. The seriousness of the allegations meant they had to be sent to Norwich Crown Court, with a plea and trial preparation hearing on October the 29th. Bankhart, who was originally from Brazil but has lived in the UK for a number of years, is also accused of causing serious injury by dangerous driving, assault and engaging in controlling and coercive behaviour. He was remanded to remain in custody until the Crown Court hearing. Magistrates refused a bail application by defence solicitor Kirsty Chaplin, who had proposed conditions including surrendering his passport. The A146 was closed for several hours following the collision, which occurred at 8:36 p.m. on September the 26th. The Astra, being driven by Bankhart, had struck an oncoming car, which then spun around and collided with a third vehicle, the court was told. The male drivers of the other two cars, a Honda and an Audi, were taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, and one is still being treated for serious injuries. Police had received a 999 call an hour before the crash at 7:40 p.m, raising concerns for the safety of Bankhart and three children, said Ms. Lamb. Officers had attempted to speak to him on the phone, and efforts were made to locate his vehicle before the crash. As a result of this contact, Norfolk Constabulary has referred itself to the IOPC, that's the Independent Office for Police Conduct, as is standard procedure.
A moving ceremony on the Norfolk coast has seen a new lifeboat named in honour of a community nurse who died suddenly at the age of 58 years old. Crew members, family and other guests gathered at Caister Lifeboat Station for the official naming ceremony of the service's 1.8 million new vessel. The boat will now sail under the name the Annette Thurlow, wife of former coxswain Dick Thurlow and mother of current coxswain Richard Thurlow and crew member Aaron Thurlow. It is thought to be the first time lifeboatmen will serve on a craft named after their mother. Richard said, "It is a special day. It's an emotional day for the family. It would be nice to have my mum looking after me when we're out on a launch." Annette Thurlow worked as a community nurse for more than 30 years and was known for her diligence, compassion and discretion. She was also deeply involved in lifeboat life, once even going out on a shout herself. After being diagnosed with Parkinson's, she had to cut her career short. She died in 2018, aged 58. But difficulty establishing a cause of death meant her organs could not be donated, devastating her family. Comedian and stalwart Caister lifeboat supporter Jim Davidson backed the appeal to have the lifeboat named in her honour. Guests at Tuesday's ceremony included local schoolchildren waving flags, the Great Yarmouth Brass Band, the Reverend Simon Ward of Great Yarmouth Minster, the Mayor of Great Yarmouth Borough, Carl Annison, and Lady Dannett, the Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk. Lady Dannett said, "Today is a time for pride, reflection and celebration for all that has enabled this remarkable achievement. Annette was a nurse for more than 30 years who lived a life defined by compassion, care and quiet strength. The lifeboat will be a living embodiment of Annette's values. When the lifeboat is launched into the sea, her name will echo across the waves." Paul Garrard, lifeboat chairman, said, "It's a very proud day, not only for Caister, but also Great Yarmouth and Norfolk." Caister Parish Council chairman Kevin Wood said, "We're very proud of this lifeboat. It's an amazing achievement for an independent charity to get a new lifeboat costing £1.8 million. There was no funding from the RNLI. All the money was raised from donations, and everybody who works on the lifeboat is a volunteer." After the boat was blessed and named, crew launched it into the water off Caister Beach, where people watching it passed by before it returned to shore. The new boat is the latest in a string of craft required to launch in emergencies up to 30 times a year. In January this year, crew waved goodbye to the Bernard Matthews 2, which had saved more than 70 lives, a dog and even a squirrel in its 20 years on the Norfolk coastline. The Annette Thurlow, built on the Isle of Wight, has already served several life-saving missions for Caister Independent Service.
A Norfolk boat builder who began working on the Broads at 15 has opened his own boatyard. Ben Knight, now 31, left his job as manager of Southgate's Boatyard in Horning to set up his own traditional boat building and marine care business, Stalham Marine Services. Based at Stalham Staithe, the company offers a range of services from wooden boat building to maintenance, repairs and storage. Mr. Knight began his career at the age of 15, working for Waveney River Centre and City Boats in Norwich. He went on to train as a boat builder at the International Boat Building Training College, IBTC, in Lowestoft in 2014, before joining Southgate's Boatyard, where he worked for more than a decade. "Starting up on my own is the best thing I've ever done," Mr. Knight said. "The beauty of this site is that there is a wet shed in Stalham owned by Paul Richardson, which he has around 100 traditional wooden boats in. We're just around the corner, so the market for maintenance has never been easier. They can literally float around the river for 10 minutes and they're here. What I would like to try and do is to offer an affordable service, because sometimes bills for boat owners can become out of control and they can no longer afford it. There comes a point with wooden boats when they're not worth repairing. The idea is that we make maintenance and repairs affordable for customers, offering them absolutely every service. Despite fears from some Broads boatyards, Mr. Knight says traditional wooden boat building is not a dying industry. It's definitely not dying, that's for sure, he said. But it is a tricky industry. The boat building college in Oulton Broad, where Mr. Knight trained, closed in December last year. He said there's a desperate need for training centres to encourage more youngsters to pursue careers within the industry. There is a need for training because we're going to get to a point where those of us working in the industry are going to get older, he added. We need younger people coming through and apprentices round the workshop.
On a similar subject, an expanding Broads boatyard has opened a new £900,000 workshop. Cox's Boatyard at Barton Turf on the River Ant says its new workshop will enable it to increase its wide range of boat repair, maintenance and restoration services. The workshop has space for 12 boats and features a specialist paint bay for vessels up to 50 foot, 15.2 metres long, as well as a new engineering area. The state-of-the-art facility replaces two old buildings at the boatyard, which the firm said had come to the end of their lives. Cox's Boatyard Managing Director, Eric Bishop, said the project had been several years in the making. We're delighted with the end result, he said. Our ever-growing business had certainly already outgrown the main workshop, which was built 10 years ago. Construction of the workshop, which has a 502-square-metre floor space, took 28 weeks. Cox's Boatyard's restoration services include repairs and painting of wood and fibreglass boats of all sizes and ages. Its engineering department covers servicing, repairs and the installation of inboard engines, outboards and electric motors. The marina at Barton Turf has 180 floating moorings and around 100 spaces on the bank for dinghies and out-of-water storage. Cox's Boatyard's current directors and shareholders have led the development of the yard since 1995. It currently employs 15 members of staff who have a combined 170 years of boat building experience. A boatyard has operated from land near Barton Staithe since the 1800s.
A sad day for Gorston High Street yet again. A family-run butcher's has announced its sudden closure due to unforeseen economic circumstances after seven decades of trading. Fleetwood's Butcher's on Gorston High Street, which has been serving the town since the 1950s, took to Facebook to announce that it will close for the last time very soon. Owner Mark Allen said in the post that deciding to shut down for good has been a very emotional decision for him and his family. His post read, "It is with a very heavy heart, but Fleetwood's will cease to trade after October the 1st, 2025, due to unforeseen economic circumstances. As a family-run business, it has been very emotional and a hard time for us to make this decision. We've loved being there through hard times, COVID, through different changes, but most of all, the good times we have spent getting to know all of our customers. Myself and my family would like to say a massive thank you. We have valued your continued support, especially over the last few years."
Aerated water in Great Yarmouth. It is a book telling the story of a trade which had almost been forgotten, if it were not for the remnants of other people's rubbish. For some time now, Michael Krask and Roger Silver have been investigating the history of the many mineral water and ginger beer manufacturers in Great Yarmouth and have discovered the stories behind about 100 of them. In 1973, I, along with thousands of other people throughout the country, spent weekends digging for old bottles on Victorian and Edwardian refuse dumps. At the time, these bottles would have been thrown away within living memory of our grandparents, says Michael. Over many decades, a wide range of Great Yarmouth bottles have been discovered, produced by many different manufacturers, he adds. He was fortunate to be good friends with another local man, the late Des Woodhouse, who had a large collection of rare bottles, many the only known examples within the bottle collecting circle. And then, in 2017, Michael was doing some research on Blanchflowers, a Great Yarmouth fish paste manufacturer, when staff at the town library suggested he visit Cobham Miniatures in Broad Row, who stocked many local books and may have more information. He got to know owner Roger Silver, and they agreed to get together and write a book about the preserving of fish industry, but first, the bottles advertising their manufacturers got in the way. They had a great story to tell, so the two of them got together to track down the stories behind the manufacturers and the drinks they produced in the days long before the many fizzy drinks on offer today. Before the 1820s, still drinks were the everyday beverage, such as beer, still spar and spring waters, and fruit-flavoured cordials. Ordinary drinking water was likely to be contaminated with all kinds of nasties. One of the earliest flavoured drinks recorded is barley water. King George III was said to enjoy a tipple after a hard day's hunting. Ginger beer had originally been introduced to Britain from America during Elizabethan times. And one of the earliest written references to lemonade as a beverage was made in 1663, when refreshment houses began appearing with orangeade following. Over the years, Great Yarmouth has had many mineral water and ginger beer manufacturers operating across the town. And the book gives a brief history of the companies since 1840 until the 1970s, when most of the smaller ones had closed. Back in the heyday, Norwich had around 84 manufacturers, while Great Yarmouth have approximately 100. But of course, times were changing. There was mass production of soft drinks by companies such as Cayley's, Schweppes, Corona and Dala covering the country. Turn the pages of this self-published and important history offering and you will get to read all about these early companies, how and where they operated, from thanks to the bottles they produced and a great deal of research by Michael and Roger. The book first came out in 2022, but received no publicity, and now copies priced at £12 plus £2.50 postage from Michael on 01603 407 455 or Roger on 01493 665 806. Adding a Grapevine editor's comment, many listeners will probably remember those remaining after World War II, specifically Fields, Lawrence's and Hunt's. Hunt's was possibly the longest survivor, as on the back of their takeover of Lacon's in its original iteration, Whitbreads, when they were still in the drinks business, started to distribute Hunt's mixers, such as tonic water, ginger ale, bitter lemon and fruit juices, and tried to compete with Schweppes nationally. However, the name seems now to have disappeared.
And I can remember the days when the Corona man used to come round with Corona bottles.
Oh, yes.
And my favourite was Dandelion and Burdock. They had this unique top that used to pop, I think, to open it up. And then if you returned the bottle, I think you got a penny or something back on it.
Yeah.
Oh, my lost youth.
I think it went even up to 2p.
Oh, really? Oh, cost of living. Anyway, we all enjoyed our Corona.
Yes.
Right. Dire consequences for Broads. Critics have warned the Broads could face dire consequences if changes to planning rules that would water down protections for the environment to go ahead. The Broads Authority had intervened after it emerged the government was considering removing policies that safeguard national parks in the government's new planning bill. Recent reports suggest Labour may seek to remove a policy that requires new developments to seek to further the landscape as part of its efforts to remove obstacles to housing developments. In a statement, a spokesman for the authority said the move would risk harming the biodiversity of the waterways. He said, as the planning authority for the Broads National Park, the BA is extremely concerned at recent reports which indicate an intention to water down or even reverse the recently introduced public landscapes duty. Whilst it appears the aim is to remove potential blockages to large-scale housing, business and infrastructure developments, such a sweeping change is not needed in the Broads. There is no evidence that the duty has delayed or prevented appropriate or suitable development here. Such a move could have potentially dire consequences for the Broads, other national parks and protected landscapes in the UK. The duty currently encourages a carefully considered approach to planning. It has the potential to protect our most iconic landscapes better and support nature and biodiversity at a time when it's most needed. Such a change would be a step backwards. The BA has joined other national park authorities in condemning the potential changes. Tom Hine, Chief Executive of North York Moors National Park, who spoke on behalf of the parks across the country, added, "We call on the government to think carefully before proceeding with a sweeping and blanket U-turn that could undermine all the positive collaboration that the duty has helped to foster." A spokesman for the government said rumours of these changes is pure speculation, adding, it is committed to delivering the infrastructure and homes the country needs while preserving the natural beauty of our protected landscapes.
Next year's inaugural public vote to elect a mayor for Norfolk and Suffolk should be delayed, say councillors. Members of the Green Party in Norwich want the election, due to be held in May 2026, to be delayed, even though they have selected their candidate for the contest. They say the vote should be put on hold until 2027 to coincide with a reform in the voting process for such elections. Mayoral elections are currently decided through the first-past-the-post system, the same method used in council and parliamentary elections. However, the Labour government announced in its English Devolution and Community Empowerment Bill that it intends to bring in the supplementary vote system instead. In that process, voters get a first and second preference vote. If no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote on the first two preferences, all but the top two are eliminated. The second preferences are allocated to the remaining two candidates, and the candidate with the most votes after that is declared the winner. It has previously been used in Norfolk for the Police and Crime Commissioner elections. However, the mooted change is unlikely to be enacted in time for next May's Norfolk and Suffolk mayoral election. Greens at Norwich City Council want the authority's Labour leader, Mike Stonard, to approach other Norfolk and Suffolk councils to seek a delay until 2027. Lucy Galvin, deputy leader of the Green Group, said the supplementary vote system better reflected the preferences and values of voters and ensured the candidate had a broad base of support across the community. She said, this is particularly important when electing a single powerful figure across a large constituency. She said Norfolk and Suffolk will be disadvantaged if a mayor is elected under an unrepresentative electoral system less suited for the purpose. Only two candidates have been announced for the mayoral election so far, Conservative Tim Passmore and Green Caroline Topping. The new mayor will get powers over transport, skills, strategic planning and public safety, with the government giving them $37.4 million per year, a total of $1.12 billion over 30 years.
The future of Norfolk's much-anticipated dentistry school, seen as key to solving the county's dental crisis, has been thrown into doubt. Plans for the first 40 students to begin their studies next year have been dashed after the government failed to provide funding for the course, and there is still no certainty they will be able to begin in 2027. Ministers have previously expressed enthusiasm for the school, due to open at the University of East Anglia, which backers believe will go a long way to easing the problems which have seen the area dubbed a dental desert because of the challenges of accessing NHS treatment. However, they have yet to commit the necessary funding for places on the course, as the government struggles with extreme pressures on its finances. A spokeswoman for the Department of Health and Social Care said plans for the allocation of funding for dental places would be set out in due course, but did not state when. Health Minister Stephen Kinnock, who had previously described the dental school proposal as a no-brainer, responded last week. He said, "Tackling the geographical disparities in access to NHS service dentistry is vital, and the government welcomes efforts to help to deliver this ambition. Provided that a prospective dental school meets the requirements of the General Dental Council and the Office for Students, it would be considered for any future government-funded training places." Earlier this year, Norfolk Council leaders agreed to give the UEA £1.5 million to help create the building.
Two courtrooms were temporarily suspended after a defendant dramatically collapsed in the dock while being addressed by the judge. Darren Dales, 53, appeared to pass out and fall to the floor in courtroom 4 of Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court as District Judge Matthew Bone was giving him instructions about his next hearing. Dales of Weston Road in Galston had entered no plea to one charge of attempting to engage in sexual communications with a child. The court heard he was alleged to have messaged what he thought was a 14-year-old girl on Facebook, but was in fact a decoy account run by a paedophile hunter group, and asked what colour her underwear was and whether or not she had pubic hair. He is also said to have asked her to take photographs of herself and send them to him. As the judge was informing Dales that his next hearing would be held at Norwich Crown Court on October the 29th, he collapsed. Rob Bailey, who was representing Dales, jumped to assist his client, who appeared to be unconscious, and a 999 call was made. One of the magistrates who was sitting in courtroom 3 is a medical professional and assisted Dales until the emergency services arrived. The defendant was removed from the court and taken to the hospital. Both courts were briefly suspended temporarily, but hearings subsequently resumed.
A drink driver has been banned from the roads after a crash left him and his friend lucky to be alive. Police were called to a single vehicle crash in Branch Road, Halvergate, and Tyler Morse identified himself as the driver of the red Mercedes A-Class involved. Morse had been drinking before deciding to go for a drive with a friend on July the 27th, when he lost control of his car. He failed a roadside breath test and was initially taken to hospital as a precaution. The 21-year-old was later discharged with no injuries and taken into custody. His passenger was also unharmed. Morse, of Beach Drive in Great Yarmouth, appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court on September the 23rd, where he pleaded guilty to drink driving. He provided an evidential breath sample of 81 micrograms of alcohol in 100 millilitres of breath, and the legal limit is 35. Morse was sentenced to a 20-month driving ban and ordered to pay £659 in fines and costs. Sergeant James Shepherd of the Roads and Arms Policing Team said, "Both Morse and his passenger are lucky to be alive. His actions put both their lives at risk, and it could have had devastating consequences for anyone else on the road at that time."
All but two of Norfolk's MPs have backed the bid for three new councils to replace the county's current eight when they are axed. South Norfolk MP Ben Goldsborough and Broadland and Fakenham MP Jerome Mayhew are the only parliamentary representatives who chose not to support the three council model proposed by the majority of Norfolk's district councils. Norwich, Breckland, Broadland, Great Yarmouth, Norfolk and West Norfolk all agreed to submit the future Norfolk proposal to the government as part of the process of local government reorganisation. Councils were invited to submit proposals for the biggest shake-up in local government in 50 years, which will see all Norfolk's councils abolished. The future Norfolk proposal is for three unitary councils, providing all services, with one covering Greater Norwich, one for East Norfolk and one for West Norfolk. Conservative MP Jerome Mayhew has not publicly stated his support for any of the proposals. The final decision on what model to introduce will rest with the government after public consultation. Ministers had previously said they wanted to see consensus. Supporters of the three council model will hope being able to demonstrate support from the majority of the county's MPs will give weight to their case.
A man has been fined £1,000 after he admitted dumping waste. He was captured on CCTV fly-tipping piles of rubbish at the side of Lancaster Road and York Road in Great Yarmouth, at the rear of the Willow Tree Works building. Interviewed under caution by Great Yarmouth Borough Council's environmental rangers, the man admitted illegally dumping the waste and claimed it had originally been left on his property by other people. His penalty was reduced to £750 for early payment. CCTV footage showed dining chairs, upholstered seats, a mattress, polythene waste, timber, carpet and other items being dumped. Officers said they would have pursued the man through the courts if he had not paid the fixed penalty notice on time. Earlier this year, litter pickers in Great Yarmouth complained they regularly find mattresses and furniture dumped in the town centre. Paul Wells, the Borough Council's portfolio holder for waste, said, "Where we can, we will always take action against those who blight the lives of others by illegally fly-tipping, and, where necessary, we will prosecute those responsible." Fly-tipping in Great Yarmouth Borough can be reported via the Love Clean Streets app or website, via email at environmentalrangers@greatyarmouth-yarmouth.gov.uk or by calling 01493 846 478.
A charity has refused to accept a £5,000 donation from a Norfolk MP because they don't like his politics. Great Yarmouth MP Robert Lowe, who donates his monthly salary to local charities, has called the decision pathetic. Writing on X, the businessman, who was booted out of Reform after a dramatic fallout with Nigel Farage, said, "A local Great Yarmouth charity refused my salary donation today, clearly because they don't like my approach to politics. Left-leaning people involved. Thousands of pounds that won't go to the people they're supposed to help because they can't put petty politics aside. Very disappointing." He has not revealed the name of the charity that refused his donation. Mr. Lowe has been donating his salary to local causes since he won his seat in July 2024, having promised to do so during his campaigning. So far, he has given cash to several charities, including the East Coast Truckers, a local hospice, and Hemsby Lifeboat. The multi-millionaire businessman earns more than £91,000 a year through his MP salary. He has also been paid more than £40,000 by X since being elected last July through his monetized posts on the platform.
A new NHS body formed from a cross-county merger has named its first chief executive officer. The Norfolk and Suffolk ICB, Integrated Care Board, is set to be formed in April next year from the planned merger of Norfolk and Waveney ICB with its equivalent in Suffolk. Ahead of the merger, Ed Garrett has been appointed chief executive designate of the new organisation. Dr. Garrett is currently the shared chief executive of both Norfolk and Waveney ICB and the Suffolk and North East Essex ICB, having taken on the Norfolk and Waveney role following the resignation of Tracy Bleakley in May. It has now been confirmed that he will lead the new organisation when it goes live in April. Dr. Garrett said, "I'm honoured to lead our new proposed organisation and look forward to supporting excellent work of our hard-working staff to improve health outcomes across Norfolk and Suffolk." Chairman-designate of the NHS Norfolk and Suffolk ICB, Professor Will Pope, said, "Ed has an impressive track record of delivery and has built an excellent reputation over his 10 years as an NHS CEO." Claire Panicker, Regional Director for NH England in the East of England, added, "This appointment will play a pivotal role in helping us deliver the bold and ambitious 10-year health plan here in the East of England."
Philby Boutique Spa. A couple who have been operating a boutique spa retreat in the Broads without planning permission could finally see their business legitimised. Lorraine and Paul Thompson are seeking retrospective approval to change the use of their property, the Black Barn on Market Lane in Philby, to a mixed-use leisure facility. The proposals include a spa, treatment rooms, a cafe and four holiday cabins with hot tubs. Planning officers at Great Yarmouth Borough Council have recommended approval despite objections from Norfolk County Council Highways and local residents. Concerns have been raised about increased traffic in the rural area and the intense use of the site. The business has been trading unlawfully since 2019, offering overnight stays and spa treatments. According to planning documents, structures have also been erected in the rear garden without consent and used as treatment rooms. A previous bid to regularise the business was refused in July 2024 over fears of urbanisation of the countryside. The new application will be discussed at the Council's Development Management Committee on Wednesday, October the 8th. If approved, the resort would be allowed to host up to 8 overnight guests and 12 day visitors at any one time. It would also employ 12 people, including 11 part-time and 1 full-time staff. Highways have objected to the plans due to the increase in traffic in a remote location. Meanwhile, 2 objections from members of the public have warned about the potential intense use of the site and the fact the business has been operating without planning permission. The Thompsons bought the site in 2015 before opening the holiday let on the site of a former pig shed. The site currently has 3 bedrooms, a spa complex with treatment rooms and a 6-person swimming pool.
Sense, you had style, you had cash galore.
Looks.
You employed her in just an informal fashion. Still, you bore her because you ain't got a nose that's straight, a set of perfect teeth. You got a built-in seat that makes you look your feet. You know that looks, looks, looks are why you rely on books.
Looks.
From the eye to the brains, just an inch or two.
Notes, notes, notes.
From the eye to the heart, only slightly farther. The smart grows smarter, but still can't compete. And they know deep down that they are smart for life, and that a face can launch a thousand hips. It's gonna be alright. If it ain't, don't blame me, it's your looks.
At night, she masquerades her fashion covered by a veil of calm. Say, put on your shoes. Say, put on your shoes, no use. One look at her and anyone can tell that she's on fire.
Spark her, ever. Spark her, ever. Spark her, ever. Well, now she's all over you.
Looks, looks, looks.
No, it's not very hard to make history.
Looks, looks, looks.
Just some cavalry and a good uniform that fits in places. Well, everyone tends to look and marvel at the way you lead them on, and look and marvel at the way you win because of looks, looks, looks. As long as you're not on looks. Spot her ever. Spot her ever. Spot her. Well, now she's all over you.
Looks, looks, looks.
Far away, close at hand, it's the only thing.
Looks, looks, looks.
Honesty is in the sun, any place is laced with those who have it, and those who can only look,
look,
look, look, look.
Sparks and one of their, it has to be said, least successful hits, Looks, Looks, Looks. Vaguely appropriate to that last story, maybe. OK, time for some news in brief. Firstly, from Margaret.
And now some news in brief. 30 affordable properties have been completed in Ashcroft in Yarmouth, following a mix of 2, 3 and 4 bedroom houses and 1 bedroom flats just minutes from the seafront. Built by Flagship Homes, the development is intended for families on local housing waiting lists. Oleg Barsukov, project manager at Flagship Homes, said, "We're building homes to meet the needs of the local community. The responses from both them and the local council have been really positive. Each home includes air source heat pumps and electric vehicle chargers to improve energy efficiency. The site was previously part of Northgate Hospital." Great Yarmouth has been named the bingo capital of the UK, according to new data. The data found that the town has the most bingo halls per 100,000 people in the country, with a score of 15. Great Yarmouth beat strong competition from the likes of Blackpool and Hull. The closest competitor was the East Lindsey area, which is home to Skegness. All of the top 5 are seaside spots. A mum who started her business by selling 10 cake slices a day is launching her second store. Amy Phillips from Freethorpe realised there was a gap in the market for a cake and milkshake shop. What started as a cake shed from her home soon grew enough in popularity to open Platinum Stores and Bakes last October. A year on, Mrs. Phillips is launching her second shop in Acle. "We've drawn the whole village from those surrounding areas into the shop, and I now have to make triple the cakes," she said. The shop in Acle will be offering milkshakes, freshly baked cakes, loaded hot chocolates, pick and mix and more. The Acle branch of Platinum Stores and Bakes is opening at 10 a.m. on Saturday and is located in the street. And I hope you didn't hear my tummy rumbling reading all that lot out. 3 Vietnamese nationals are set to stand trial accused of cannabis production in Norfolk. All 3 have been charged with production of cannabis in Great Yarmouth earlier this summer. The 3 defendants, all of no fixed abode, appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Friday when they all denied cannabis production. The trial date of January the 12th next year was fixed by recorder Ed Ronvoys. The defendants were remanded in custody.
And 4 more items of news in brief. A man's revised bid to open a dog exercise field has passed a planning milestone. Peter Martin wants to change the use of a grazing paddock to a secure dog exercise park on Mill Road in Borough Castle. A previous bid was refused by planners, but now a revised proposal is being recommended for approval ahead of a meeting on October the 8th. According to the plans, all users will be required to use a booking system, which allows for either half an hour or 1 hour slots with a 10-minute gap between bookings to allow for the changeover. There is also a limit of a maximum 6 dogs and 2 cars at any given time. Mr. Martin said the field would provide a much-needed new dog exercise and training facility. A large fire broke out at the village allotments in Bradwell. Fire crews were called to the scene off Lord's Lane in Bradwell at 10 p.m. on Sunday. They used hose reel jets and hand appliances to extinguish the blaze until receiving their stop message at around 11:30 p.m. Piles of charred debris can be seen gathered in one corner of the allotment area. The cause of the fire is not yet known. A village post office that closed almost 30 years ago will be converted into a house. Paul Pitchers has been given permission by Broadland District Council to change the use of the former Halvergate post office to residential dwelling. According to planning documents, the facility closed in 1999 due to the lack of use by local residents, as there were similar services at Freethorpe and Brundle. Plans to convert the buildings were given before, in 2013, but this was never completed. And finally, in brief, people can learn about heart health at two events happening in Lowestoft and Yarmouth. Pumping Marvellous, a charity dedicated to heart failure, is hosting two events titled Together We'll Beat Heart Failure. The events will be supported by various healthcare companies, along with the James Paget University Hospital and the NHS Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board. They will take place on October the 8th at Water Lane Sports Centre in Lowestoft and on October the 9th at Market Gates Shopping Centre in Great Yarmouth.
Thanks, Desney. OK, it's time to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A new store. A major European retailer is offering free shoes to customers for a special launch event. Deichmann, the German footwear specialist, will open the doors of its brand new branch in Marketgate Shopping Centre on Tuesday, October the 7th. The store will then celebrate the opening on Saturday, October the 11th, with in-store giveaways, offers and family activities throughout the day. There will be free shoes on pairs costing up to £30 for the store's first 25 customers. Opening offers on a select range of shoes, such as 50% off selected lines and a spin the wheel game. The shop will take over the Mall's former Select store and employ 10 workers, including assistant, supervisor and manager roles. Deichmann's new store will feature men's, women's and children's footwear, including well-known labels such as Adidas, Nike, Skechers, Puma and Fila. Deichmann was founded over 100 years ago in Essen, Germany, and currently boasts more than 49,000 employees and about 4,700 shops in 34 countries. Marco Josifowski, Managing Director at Deichmann UK, said, "We're really pleased to be opening this new store and bringing our great value offering to Great Yarmouth."
A new independent optician's has opened on the coast, where you can also get your ears cleaned. CJ Opticians and Clearer Ears celebrated its officially opening on Baker Street in Galston on Saturday, September the 26th. Managing Director Claire Pugh said, "What an amazing launch with amazing people and great wine, thanks to Via Vigna on Baker Street. We met some fabulous people and were absolutely blown away by all the support of our local community. We're immensely proud and honoured," she added. The clinic offers a full range of services, including eye exams, contact lens fittings, and a selection of designer eyewear with prices starting from £25. It also features the latest diagnostic technology and includes a dedicated earwax removal service under the Clearer Ears name. The business is located in the premises formerly occupied by industrial equipment supplier Orbital Procurement Solutions Limited. It is led by optometrist director Richard Pugh, who said the new practice aims to provide a personalised approach to eye care for the local community.
Council considers auctioning off Banksy. A mural sprayed on the Galston seafront by the mysterious Banksy could be sold off by the local cash-strapped council, earning it millions of pounds. The artwork was painted onto the side of Galston's yacht pond in 2021 as part of the artist's Great British Spraycation series, which saw him create a total of 10 works in the region. Great Yarmouth Borough Council, which owns the pond, has proposed selling off the image, which depicts two children drifting skywards in a dinghy being overinflated by an adult. It removed the artwork by cutting out a section of the wall in 2022, and it has since been in storage at a restoration firm in Lincolnshire. Other artworks from the Spraycation series have already been sold, fetching up to £2 million. GYBC officials acknowledge selling the Banksy artwork risks reputational damage and said any sale would need to be undertaken in a transparent way. But any funds raised would be a welcome boost to the council's coffers, which has had to make a number of cuts to staffing and its services in recent years. The money would also be ring-fenced for projects in the Galston area. The piece proved controversial at the time, and officials decided to quickly paint over the mural, citing what they saw as parallels with the death of Ava May Littleboy, who died in July 2018 when an inflatable trampoline at Galston Beach burst. It is understood Banksy apologised to Ava May's family via a third party following the controversy, and the image was later removed from online promotional material the artist had shared online for the Great British Staycation series. However, the council decided to remove the entire wall section and restore the artwork in a process costing £14,105. It cost a further £7,623 to repair the wall. GYBC officials had considered displaying the artwork in the town's Time and Tide Museum, but decided it would be insensitive in the light of Ava May's death. They've now proposed selling off the piece via an auction or private sale and have already consulted with Dutch-based auctioneer Richard Hessink. Councillors will discuss the proposals at a meeting next week. They will also discuss what to do with another artwork from the same series, an arcade claw grabber painted on a beach shelter. The council has ruled out selling the work, which is already covered with a Perspex screen, but is considering spending around £5,000 on further protection measures. Officers said in a report that extracting the artwork to be sold would require demolishing and rebuilding the beach shelter. They also said doing so would risk upsetting the public due to the artwork being a high-profile and cherished example that attracts tourists and locals alike. Other murals created as part of the Spraycation series have been sold privately. In Lowestoft, a homeowner removed the wall of his house in order to sell a mural of a seagull painted on it. It is believed it fetched millions through a private sale. However, the move sparked anger in the town, with locals saying the artwork had been stolen from the local community. the owner of Merivale Model Village, also made £1 million after auctioning off a miniature thatched stable on which Banksy had scrawled, "Go big or go home." Another Lowestoft Banksy mural of a child with a crowbar daubed on the side of a shop is thought to have fetched £2 million in a private sale in the UK after plans to auction the piece in California fell through.
Teenagers at a Norfolk high school are being taught by video link after bosses were unable to recruit a permanent teacher. One parent of a child at Flegg High Ormest Academy claimed there was a severe teacher shortage at the school, with Year 11 groups having to follow lessons on screen from another school. The school confirmed computer science was currently the only subject without a permanent specialist. A spokesman for the Ormiston Academies Trust said lessons were being taught online by a teacher at a partner school, with a member of staff in the classroom to supervise, alongside regular face-to-face sessions. The academy also said it was bringing in extra support from another local school to increase the number of in-person specialist lessons for Year 11 and later Year 10 students. The spokesman said, "As part of our continued journey of improvement, we remain firmly focused on giving every child the highest quality education through a broad and balanced curriculum taught by expert teachers." Last week, the Trust announced that Simon Gilbert Barnum was now the senior principal of both Ormiston Venture Academy in Galston and Flegg High Ormiston Academy in Martham. At the time, Mr. Gilbert Barnum said, "There is real momentum at Flegg. We're building on that by working collaboratively, with staff and students from both schools contributing to every stage of the journey. Parents and carers are invited to see the new collaboration for themselves at Flegg High's open evening on Wednesday, October the 2nd, from 5pm to 7pm. The school celebrated its 60th anniversary in July this year. Earlier this year, Venture Academy was awarded outstanding in every category by Ofsted. Inspectors praised the school's meticulously designed curriculum, superb behaviour and palpable sense of purpose, stating that pupils do excellently at the school.
Neighbours are objecting to plans to turn a hotel into an award-winning restaurant 6 years after the change took place. The Grange Hotel in Ormsby started operating a restaurant known as the Smokehouse Bar and Grill in the summer of 2019. The landlords, however, are only now applying for retrospective planning permission for the change of use. But neighbours have complained about noise and customers parking on roadside verges without any concern for locals. According to a planning statement, the key change at the site has simply been from a hotel restaurant to a restaurant serving food and drink to the general public. The bid, which also includes the part expansion of the restaurant used to the building's first floor, is facing four objections. A neighbour living in Reynolds Avenue said that noise and disruption caused by the restaurant is affecting the neighbourhood and the health and safety of residents and drivers along the roads to and from the site. They also said the proposed 45 on-site parking spaces are not enough to accommodate the motorcycles and cars that visit on the venue's Full Throttle Thursday events for bike meets. A person living on Old Coast Road said, "It's fine being a restaurant, but they have little or no parking." Ormsby St Margaret with Scrappy Parish Council said they could only support this application after receiving information relating to concerns regarding parking, noise and opening hours. The application will be discussed at a meeting of the Borough Council's Development Management Committee meeting on Wednesday, October the 8th. Planning officials are recommending that councillors approve the plans. In July this year, the Grange Hotel and Smokehouse was awarded a 5-star hygiene rating by the Borough Council after an inspection.
A new school garden is bringing life and learning to pupils. The The facility at Peterhouse Church of England Primary Academy in Galston was officially opened on Thursday, September the 25th by the Mayor of Great Yarmouth. Ryan Freeman, Executive Head Teacher, said, "This garden is so much more than plants and soil. It's about creating opportunities for our children to flourish. Many of our families face real challenges, and this space will give pupils a chance to learn outside the classroom, to reflect and to grow in confidence." Peterhouse serves the sixth most deprived community in Norfolk, with high numbers of pupils eligible for the pupil premium and a significant number of children with special educational needs and disabilities that SEND. The garden was funded by the Department of Education through the Royal Horticultural Society administered National Education Nature Park. It aims to give pupils a safe, inspiring space to connect with nature, develop new skills and enjoy moments of calm. Carl Anderson, the mayor, said, "During our visit, the mayoress and I learnt so much from a tour by the garden prefects. The garden is already having a great impact on so many pupils at the school, and I hope it continues to do so in the years ahead. The garden will support learning across the curriculum, including science, sustainability, art and well-being."
One of the region's largest bus services is set to undergo a comprehensive review after being taken over by a national transport group. Go East Anglia, which operates Connect Bus, is in Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex, has been acquired by Transport Made Simple, one of the UK's largest independently owned passenger transport providers. The takeover is expected to be completed next month and will be followed by a detailed review of the entire bus network. However, the company says there are no immediate plans for changes to bus services following the takeover. Connect Bus Services will join Transport Made Simple's existing operations, which include the Central Connect, Flag Finders and Simmons brands. The acquisition will see the firm's fleet increase to 380 buses, coaches and minibuses, and its headcount grow to 800 members of staff.
A Norfolk police officer has been suspended from duty after being accused of shoplifting. David Howarth faces five allegations of thefts from shops said to have occurred between March the 18th and the 30th this year. The 46-year-old is a former beat manager for Galston, Cobham and Southtown and has been a serving police officer for over 20 years. All the alleged thefts involve a branch of the Co-op in Great Yarmouth and goods worth a total of £62. Items it is claimed he took without paying for include bottles of wine and champagne, cans of lager, biscuits, meat, toothpaste, oven chips, dog food, toothpaste and Mr. Kipling cherry Bakewell tarts. Howarth of Beatty Road in Great Yarmouth appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court after a previous hearing had been adjourned for prosecutors to consider the outcome of a mental health review. After being told this has not been done, District Judge Matthew Bone set a two-week deadline for the CPS to decide whether it was in the interests of justice for the charges to proceed to trial. Howarth was given unconditional bail. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary confirmed he had been suspended in light of the charges.
A Norfolk man has been banned from contacting a former MP and Celebrity Big Brother contestant after sending him more than 70 threatening emails, the court has heard. Anthony Summers pinged George Galloway, then MP for Rochdale, 74 threatening messages from his Great Yarmouth bedsit, all directed to Mr. Galloway's parliamentary email address. Norwich Crown Court heard Mr. Galloway, leader of the Workers' Party of Britain, who lost his Rochdale seat at last year's general election, felt fearful and angry about the messages sent to him between April the 7th and May the 24th last year. Emily Jarron, prosecuting, said some of the messages sent by Summers, 1941 were racist or xenophobic in nature. They also made reference to his childhood and included Summers telling Mr. Galloway that he knew people. The court heard the messages were sent in response to comments made by Mr. Galloway on his YouTube channel. The former MP, who in 2006 famously pretended to be a cat on the celebrity edition of the hit reality TV show Big Brother, licking the hand of fellow contestant, actress Rula Lenska, had previously accused the US and UK of lying about the involvement of ISIS in a Moscow terror attack in 2024, which killed 139 people. Summers, from Nelson Road Central, Yarmouth, appeared at court for sentencing on Wednesday, October the 1st, after he admitted a malicious communications offence. Imposing a six-month prison sentence, suspended for 18 months, recorder Gregory Bull said Mr. Galloway was rightly frightened he or his family could be attacked as a result of the messages. MPs have the right to be protected by the courts from people who overstep the mark in what is fair and frank comment, he said. You overstepped the red line. He said Mr. Galloway suffered a significant impact as a result of what Summers did, but recorder Bull also gave him credit for his guilty plea. Stephen Spence, mitigating, said the messages had been a long rant to Mr. Galloway. It was in response to statements the former MP had made about the 2024 terror attack in Russia. Summers was banned from contacting Mr. Galloway directly or indirectly for 5 years. He was also fined £500.
Boaters should pay more to use the Broads next year, bosses have said, but they will likely avoid the steep hikes seen in recent years. The Broads Authority has recommended an average 2.5% increase in toll fees for 2026/2027 amid continued challenges and funding cuts, with a falling number of vessels using the waterways. While the cost of using the waterways will probably still rise, the recommendation is a smaller increase than in recent years, with toll fees rising by 5.9% this year, by 8.5% in 2024, and 13% in 2023. A final decision on how much toll fees will rise will be made after the plans are discussed by Navigation Committee members, who will make their own recommendation before Broads Authority members choose the final figure. According to a briefing note issued by Chief Executive John Packman, the number of private boats using the Broads fell by 576 last year, a reduction of 5.6%. Rowing boats have had the biggest reduction in numbers. This has meant the BA faced a deficit of £118,477 last year and £77,734 this year, between the amount raised in toll fees and the estimated costs of maintaining navigation in the Broads. But whereas the charges have increased significantly in previous years, the BA has benefited from changes in how it can split its funds between its navigation and national park duties. The Department for Environment and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, which provides its annual capital and revenue grants, has said it's able to spend national park money on things that improve access to the Broads. This means some navigational costs can be covered through this money. Chief Executive John Packman, in a briefing note, said these changes have helped offset the reduced income from number of boats using the Broads, which is lower than the rate of inflation, between 3.8% to 4.6%, he said. This has put the navigation budget in a healthier position and would leave the authority in a stronger position for this year and the following too, even with our anticipated reduction in boat numbers. A final decision will be made on November the 28th following a period of consultation.
A cross-country rail line connecting Norwich to Oxford should be one of the region's top transport priorities, a powerful group of council and business leaders have argued. They claim the project would bring huge economic benefits to the region and can be accomplished by adding a Norfolk leg to an existing scheme to upgrade the line between Cambridge and Oxford. A new report by Transport East, an influential regional lobby group, says there is a compelling case for the extension to Norwich as well as another to Ipswich. The Norfolk leg would require an upgrade to the existing line to Cambridge, including major work at Ely Junction and at Trouse near Norwich, to allow more services to run direct to Oxford. The existing east-west rail project connecting the Oxbridge cities is currently estimated to cost between £5.7 billion and £6.6 billion of public money. The first phase between Oxford and Bicester has already opened, with works on the next phase expected within the next year. The project is seen as offering huge economic benefits to the country by linking up its two leading university cities and opening up new areas for housing. By extending it to Norwich, Transport East argues the scheme's benefits would be amplified and spread more broadly by helping Norfolk's burgeoning financial, creative and life science sectors, including at Norwich's Research Park, to develop. The group says the region's potential, including the Norwich to Cambridge Tech Corridor and the opportunities presented by renewable energy to towns such as Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft, is being held back because of poor east-to-west transport connections. They say better rail links, including more frequent trains to Cambridge and beyond, are crucial to help fulfil that potential and ending a restriction of opportunities for thousands of people. They want the government to commit investment to create better connections to the major economic centres of Norwich and Ipswich. That includes tackling the bottleneck at the Ely Junction. The previous government said the improvements would be made but did not commit funding. The Labour government has yet to announce any funding either. The report also highlights how some Norfolk towns are set for significant growth and improved rail services would help commuters get to work. It also points to capacity constraints at Trouse Bridge and Junction on the approaches to Norwich Station, which limits the number of services that can serve the city. A new bridge might be needed to address that issue. Amy Griffiths, Norfolk Business Board representative for Transport East, said, "Norfolk is a powerhouse of innovation and enterprise. This future economy needs the infrastructure support to allow our talented people to access these new opportunities and to spread the benefits across our communities. Strengthening rail links is vital to unlocking this growth, attracting further investment, improving productivity and sustainably connecting communities." The calls have been echoed by bosses at Greater Anglia, which provides many of the rail services in Norfolk and Suffolk.
The Campaign for Real Ale, CAMRA, has announced that its overall Cider and Perry Pub of the Year 2025 has been won by the Blackfriars Tavern in Great Yarmouth. The competition, which is held every year, awards the pub or social club that champions real cider and perry the best across the UK. The Blackfriars Tavern is a Victorian corner pub, which has more than 20 locally sourced real ciders available and some from further afield. Blackfriars Tavern landlord and freeholder Fares Smith said, Oh my word, we're overjoyed to be named CAMRA's Cider and Perry Pub of the Year 2025. This award is a tribute to our wonderful customers who create the welcoming atmosphere that makes our pub special. Not only has it been named Cider and Perry Pub of the Year, but it's also in the running to win Camra's overall Pub of the Year title. Along with East Anglian Ciders and Perry's, the pub stocks 8 ever-changing cask beers, with 2 permanently on the bar from the on-site Blackfriars Tavern Brewery, plus a wide choice of bottled Belgian beers. Mr. Smith added, 5.5 years ago, we began major renovations on this disused pub, and what a journey it has been. We've loved connecting with our customers through a shared passion for real cider and perry, and we're hugely grateful to Camra for their tireless work in championing these traditional drinks. We are proud to be part of that story. Camra has just revealed the top 105 pubs in Norfolk for a pint of beer in its Good Beer Guide, with the Golfer's Arms, the latest edition for Great Yarmouth. 5 candidates are vying to become the Liberal Democrats' pick to stand in the battle to become Norfolk and Suffolk's first elected mayor. The election to the new role is due to take place in May next year, and parties are moving to get their candidates in place. Kevin Keeble, chairman of the East of England Energy Group, that's the EEEGR, had already thrown his hat in the ring to be the Liberal Democrats' candidate for the role. But 4 other candidates have also now been confirmed, including Chris Brown, the leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition at South Norfolk Council and district councillor for Ditchingham and Ersham, Sean Bennett, who stood for the party in last year's Norwich South parliamentary election, is also in the running. John London, a district councillor for Exning on the West Suffolk Council, is hoping to be selected. And Galston businessman John Shreve, who stood for the Lib Dems in last year's Waveney Valley general election, is the other candidate. The Conservatives have already selected Suffolk Police and Crime Commissioner Tim Passmore to be their candidate, while Caroline Topping, leader of East Suffolk Council, is the Greens' party choice. The new mayor would head up a combined county authority, which would be made up of Norfolk and Suffolk's councils. However, exactly which councils will be part of that in the longer term remains up in the air because of forthcoming local government reorganisation.
A family living in a caravan in Catfield have lost their battle to stay on the plot, with officials giving them 12 months to move on. Tom Harbour, his wife and 2 children, had been living at Malthouse Corner near the village since they bought the site at auction in July 2022. However, since moving there, they got in trouble with North Norfolk District Council, which said they did not have the correct permission to use the land as a residential home. They attempted to get permission by applying to turn the change of use of the land into a gypsy and traveller site. But this was refused earlier this year on the grounds that the location was remote and isolated, with a lack of nearby facilities and fears it would have a negative visual and environmental impact. During this time, a number of caravans and mobile homes have been sighted on the land at various points. The family, who described their lifestyle as nomadic, appealed to the Planning Inspectorate, the department that presides over planning disputes, to overturn the decision. But the official has dismissed the appeal and has granted the family 12 months to comply with an enforcement notice which prevents them from living on the land.
Controversial plans to turn farmland into 200 homes at the edge of an acre village have been given the green light by planners despite backlash from villagers. Officers at Broadland District Council have recommended councillors approve the scheme next week. Crocus Homes want to construct 100 homes in the 20-hectare plot off Levins Lane, as well as 90 retirement apartments for the over-55s, a country park and a car park. But the plans have sparked opposition from villagers and countryside campaigners. The Campaign for the Protection of Rural England has warned the proposal will lead to the loss of farmland to unplanned housing, calling it windfall development. The site has not yet been allocated in the council's local plan, a key document detailing where housing developments can take place. Other villagers worry key services like the GP surgery will struggle to cope with the growing population. However, officials have recommended the scheme be approved by the development committee next week, assuming the developer agrees to meet several conditions. Members will meet on October the 8th to make a decision.
Vandals have targeted a Norfolk club, smashing up its office. They broke into the Bure Park Pitch and Putt in Great Yarmouth, breaking parts of the slate roof and ceiling. A spokesman for the Borough Council, which manages the site, said, "We are saddened that the golf payment office at Bure Park has been broken into and vandalised. This is extremely disappointing, as mindless vandalism not only causes disruption, but also costs money that could be far better spent on delivering valuable services for our community." Despite the damage, the office remains open, and the council is urging anyone with information to contact the police. The incident is thought to have happened overnight between Thursday, September the 25th, and Friday, September the 26th. The Bure Park Pitch and Putt course sits within a 20-acre public space and offers an 18-hole course to visitors during the season, which runs from Easter until the end of October. Norfolk Police have launched an investigation.
Well, that's it for this week's news. But if you have a few minutes to spare, keep listening for Grapevine Extra. Welcome to Grapevine Extra, where this week Disney, as you would expect, gives some ideas for this week's TV.
Right, here's a few things you might like to watch on television this coming week. There are two dramas. The first one is called Frauds, and it's one of those dramas that is on for two nights at a time. So there are six episodes, the first two being on Sunday and Monday. And I'm sorry if you don't get your stick in time to know that it started on Sunday. Because if you start with Monday, you'll have missed something. But you can always try the catch-up method, can't you? ITV it's on, so that's ITVX. It's a drama called Frauds, which stars Saran Jones and Jodie Whittaker, two very well-known actors, and they're playing the parts of Sam and Bert. They're best frenemies, apparently. They're both criminals. And Sam is freshly released from a 10-year stretch in a Spanish jail. And she's been told that she's only got 6 months to live, but instead of taking things easy, she reconnects with her former partner in crime, Bert, and tries to persuade her to join her in one last heist, which could get them millions. Sounds as if there's rather a lot of twists and turns in that. On Tuesday, on Channel 5, there is another drama beginning. This is Murder Before Evensong. And if you've ever seen the Reverend Richard Coles on television, he's a former pop star too, isn't he? He is now taken up to writing these mystery books, and he has created the character of Canon David Clement, who is played by Matthew Lewis, who some of you might have seen if you have ever watched a Harry Potter film, because he used to be Neil Longbottom. So here he is now as Canon Daniel Clements in Richard Cole's Murder Before Evensong adaptation from his first novel. And it's adapted from his first novel where David finds himself entangled in a murder investigation after he stumbles upon a dead body in his church. Two dramas there for you to watch. If you're more into reality television, there are two programmes upcoming. There is the long-awaited Traitors celebrity version. And there is another one which sounds as if it's more on the lines of Racing Through the World, isn't it? What's that one called? Well, this one is on Channel 4 on Tuesday, and it's called Worlds Apart. And it's a generation gap-spanning social experiment in which half a dozen young Brits who've never travelled alone are paired up with six pensioners, like you and me, Margaret, who thought they'd never travel far again for the ultimate treasure hunt across Japan. These strangers, when they're paired up, must quickly learn to work together, because if they can't, it means a one-way ticket back home. And that's the end of Japan for them. So, well, that could be interesting. Now, the first one, as I say, the one that's on Wednesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. is the first of the well-advertised celebrity traitors. It's been well-advertised for some time. And if you're a fan of Claudia Winkleman in the Traitors for Ordinary People, you'll be pleased to see her back in the Celebrity Traitors, which does have a real celebrity lineup, which includes such people as Stephen Fry, Jonathan Ross, Kate Garraway, Celia Imrie, Tom Daly, Alan Carr, Paloma Faith. And this is the first and second, because it's on Wednesday and Thursday at 9 p.m, of nine programmes. So obviously that doesn't work out at two a week, does it? So there's going to be one the last week. Right, and finally, the sport. If you're a football fan, you will already know that Sunday, well, a bit dramatic, isn't it? Ipswich versus Norwich. Norwich have not yet won at home, but they haven't lost away, and they're playing Ipswich away. I say they haven't lost. They have drawn, so they haven't always won. But they're playing at Ipswich on Sunday, and it must be so important because it's on ITV1 at 11:30 a.m. until 2:15. And it's also on BBC Radio Norfolk, of course, from 11 a.m. 11 a.m. for an hour of pre-match. Then the match kicks off at 12 o'clock. And then after the match, there's Canary Call from 2 until 3. There's more football on at the other end of the week. But also at the weekend, of course, you have your Grand Prix. The Singapore Grand Prix for you Formula One fans. And I have it on very good authority that the build-up starts at 11:30 and the race itself starts at 1 p.m. There are highlights on Channel 4 at 5:30, so that means that you can decide to watch the football if you want to and still see the highlights of the Formula One. Or you can just watch Formula One on Sky from 11:30. The football at the end of the week, on Thursday on ITV at 7 p.m, there is a match at Wembley, England versus Wales, but this is just a friendly. It's a charity match in support of the Alzheimer's Society. And as I say, the programme starts at 7 p.m, so kick-off is probably likely to be 7:30, I don't know. And it finishes at 10:05, which means the news will not be at 10, it will be at 10:05. And also, on the same night, at the same time, almost, on BBC Two, there is a World Cup qualifier. So if you don't want to watch England play Wales, if you are the other member of the United Kingdom, you're Scotland, then you can watch them in a World Cup qualifier against Greece at Hampden Park from 7:30 until 10. On Friday, BBC Two are again showing a World Cup qualifier. And this time, the only other country left is Northern Ireland versus Slovakia. And that's 7:30 till 10 on BBC Two. So you've got plenty of football matches. You've got a Singapore Grand Prix. And you've got some nice dramas and entertainment. Hope there's something you'll like in that lot.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's newsreaders will be Andy and Alison, so we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. From everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now.